Greetings, wonderful people. You're listening to The Andrew Miller Show. This episode, we're talking with David Radovaugh, Libertarian Party candidate running for Georgia Agriculture Commissioner. He's a businessman and family man from Marietta, Georgia. David has a strong background in the security industry. He's a founder of multiple cannabis-focused technology startups and sales organizations, and currently serves as the head of the Cannabis Hemp Education Research Company. Acronym is CHERCO, C-H-E-R-C-O, and I have a site, CHERCO.org. He's working to bring education and research of the cannabis plant to the public. That's what that organization is about. You can read more about David Radovaugh and his campaign and joint decision vision at his campaign site, jointdecisionforgeorgia.com. For now, let's hear what he has to say. Hello, David Radovaugh. Thank you for joining the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, definitely. So what made you choose the Libertarian Party and why run for Georgia Agriculture Commissioner?
Well, I'll take those in steps because they came to me that way in steps. And so Georgia Agriculture Commissioner was first. And why I picked this position was I saw so much going wrong with the cannabis laws in the state that are coming onto play and that are already existing on the books. I mean, it's if we do get time here today to go into a bit of that, it's just crazy the way that our current legislators have set themselves up for almost what 99% of the people would consider a fraudulent activity. And then into the law, they wrote themselves cover for it. So the very first reason, or the very first part of your question was why agriculture commissioner is because I'm a lifelong, a long time advocate of cannabis, not only adult use cannabis. And that's one thing. And most people kind of stop there and put an end to that sentence. But what's really important to understand about cannabis and what's happened in the state is the industrial use of hemp. That is so much more important to the state for our financial system, for our jobs, for the ecology. And that's the real thing, getting back to repairing our ecosystem, because the current farming system is really not doing the best thing for our ecology. Okay. It's really doing the best thing for a projected goal of saying, hey, let's feed the world. So number one, and I'm going to come back to what I think's wrong with agriculture, I think would be a good follow-up question. But to answer part of it, you said why. And so the first part was I just got so upset. I became an activist, literally. This is the first political office I've ever run for. Although I do like to tell the story about the first election I ever was involved in. I got 86% of the vote in that election. And unfortunately, it was in high school. So there's a few years have transpired since then. Similar issues of what motivated me back then and what is motivating me today, actually, they overlap. It's not to say that it's a single issue, but it's an issue. And that's why I start with this cannabis thing. As a matter of fact, my website is jointdecisionforgeorgia.com, right? So the idea behind that is to play. One is, there's a neat kind of marketing play. I don't know if you've seen it on my website, but I actually give out joints at all the events I go to the people who are there with my campaign name on it and everything.
Nice.
So jointdecisionforgeorgia.com is the website. The hashtag is jointdecisionGA. And so the idea behind this cannabis push is really twofold. One is the idea of saying, how do we cross parties? Where is the situation? Because as a third party candidate, and this is the going back to the second part of your first question, why libertarian? I did that to get on the ballot. Okay, just straight up, that I did it to get on the ballot. I wanted to be on the ballot against the two-party system. You know, they had already kind of selected the way they were going. And as a matter of fact, I even toyed with talking with the other parties before selecting the libertarians. The libertarians are a little more on my side of personal rights. As a matter of fact, That's where I agree 100% with the libertarians on personal rights. There's some stuff that we disagree on, and I get often into battles with other libertarians. So,
oh, sure.
You know, which is, I guess, part of the fun of being a libertarian. You got to learn to take hits and give hits, because, you know, arguing seems to be the pastime. So that was something that surprised me a little bit about the libertarians as I jumped into it, because most of my life I've been a liberal conservative, meaning, you know, I have a lot of liberal policies, including, you know, cannabis, but in personal rights overall. But the idea, I've always been a pretty much conservative voter, fiscally responsive, that kind of stuff. So I went with the libertarians because it gave me a direct access to get on the ballot, which, you know, as you know, being familiar with this, that's not very easy. You know, it's expensive, number one, and depending on which party you're playing for and which position you're trying to get, you know, they really put some strong challenges in front of you. So I saw that as reason, a way for me to get in front of the public and get my cause out there. And then to circle back on that, that's really why I said, what is it something that's going to unite most of us? I thought, well, cannabis is a good start. And then I really got into the science, because as I said, I'm an advocate, but then I got into the science part of this. And really researching history of why prohibition started. And then it started getting me a little more upset. And then I started realizing and found the actual history behind why it and how it happened. You know, for years, I always heard those stories and it was mostly folklore, right? You know, people said, oh, it was because of some paper company out in California. Well, as it turns out, it was Hearst Publishing, and they were really behind part of this. You know, and other people said, well, it was because of the chemical industry. Well, it's true. You can find that DuPont Chemical just had received patents on nylon and wanted to get the hemp out of the way so that they could start producing more and more nylon. And then Standard Oil was another one. It really turns out, if you do the research, it was about five major companies that changed, that created this prohibition on cannabis. And it changed the trajectory of a number of things here in the state, especially our ecology. So that kind of brings it back. And since you said we kind of got a little bit of a runway on here in how we do, I would like to tell you what I think is wrong with agriculture today, if I want.
Oh, please do.
That's, after all, that's what the friggin' job's all about, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
About all this political BS and, you know, can I get on the ballot? Do I have signatures? You know, that whole thing that's, you know, the ball and chain on my leg to get to this position. I am on the ballot, you know.
Well, that's good then. That's good.
So we got through all of that stuff.
But that's good.
Say, what's wrong with agriculture? Because this is the core of the job, and this is why I'm so passionate. Three things are wrong with agriculture, and then I'm going to tell you how to fix them.
All right.
Things that went wrong with agriculture is, first off, mechanization. When we started to industrialize our farms, and as cool as that seems, right? Bigger tractors, you know, bigger plows, you know, front loaders. I can friggin' move a mountain and turn it into farmland. I can push over the biggest oak tree in the world and make farmland. Well, you know, from a macho standpoint, that rings true to many of us, right? You know,
sure.
Bigger, better. And there's an economic reason that farmers lean to that. Because if they could displace more workers with bigger machines and their capital expenditures, it changed their economics of their farm. Then they move mountains, push away land, change landscapes to make bigger farms, because now they got these super machines that can do it, right, with less manpower. Now that's, from a capitalist standpoint, seems pretty cool. From an agricultural standpoint, it's the worst thing you could do. Because you end up losing contact with the land itself. You no longer are concerned with the idea of permaculture. How do I do the best for my land, the best for my livestock, to produce the best quality food for my community, right? All this dynamic change, because now it's about volume, man. You know, just bought this $200,000 tractor, and I got a $1 million machine over here, and I got this property over here that now I just, you know, moved this mountain and pushed it over. Now I got another 10,000 acres of land to farm. Well, shit, you got to pay for all that. So you start looking at production of major quantities, right? All of a sudden, it's no longer, can I produce the best friggin' ear of corn that my family's ever eaten, right? I'll take it to church. Everyone in the church will love it. I'll sell it on Sunday in the community farm. Everyone will enjoy it. It'll have the healthy food. It'll have a sense of community, which agriculture really was, right? And instead now it's going to say, I need 4 metric tons of corn to ship to somewhere.
Yeah.
Or more. And so what happens is as an industrial farmer with all these big machines and all that overhead now that I've taken on, I start looking at something called a minimal market standard. So in other words, instead of saying I want the sweetest corn, the healthiest wheat, the most, you know, vibrant livestock I can produce, healthiest all and all those things, I'm saying I just need tons of this shit. How do I come about it?
Yeah.
So your quality is driven down to meet a production issue, right? And it's whether it's agriculture, the idea of now all of a sudden we got to pick it earlier. We got to spray it with more stuff because it's going to be sitting around transporting. It says, take this basket of fresh fruit that I just, or vegetables that I just grew, and I'm going to sell that to everybody in the market. It's going to buy every piece of it because they know the quality, right? So you see that this industrial thing kind of changed from what farming and really saying, you know, I got this little piece of land. I can grow corn. I can grow wheat. I can grow enough to support my family and live off of it, right? And then I can expand that. And then, like I said, we got this thing. Well, we could go big. Let's all go big. So we did that under the auspice of saying, we need to feed the world. Hell, that's noble. You know, how can I knock you for saying you want to feed the world, right? Yeah. That's noble. I mean, you know, it's like saying you know, everyone loves their grandma, right? Well, yeah, unless your grandma's crazy, everyone loves your grandma, right? You know, the same thing happened here. It was a great policy, except it's skewed in the sense that we really can't do that. And we really shouldn't be looking at that as our number one goal, because there's food shortages in these food deserts for all different reasons. It's not just because they don't have corn, right? I mean, there's broader social economic issues that come into play with that, instead of just throwing it on agriculture saying, you know what, we could grow more corn. That's what we need to do. Well, hold on, man. There's more to the story than just saying that. Because what that also says is that now, because I got this huge field of corn growing, I need more fertilizer. And because I got so much land out here, I need tons of fertilizer. And because of the current situation, where do you get tons of fertilizer because your land is so expansive? You go to a third country, right? Which almost always does not have our best interests in mind. And we say, let's buy all the nitrogen from you. And, you know, which turns out like Ukraine or Russia or, you know, those areas, we're buying the chemicals. And then theoretically having the opportunity for them to stop selling us the chemicals to get to this global cause of feeding everybody, right? So, by the way, I'm going to tell you now, 2 and 3 go faster, so don't get nervous. So we're still on number one issue, this industrialization, because it's cool, it's macho, everyone does it, and it's done under the auspice of, you know, we're going to feed the world. Well, we disrespect the land when we do that, right? You hear about runoffs and all those things and the extra pesticides that we get, and all of those things that go on to make those crops feasible, because we got away from something that's called permaculture or regenerative farming. And that's much easier done in smaller venues. And that's the way farming started, is that you would use every part of your animal and every part of the crop to be processed through back into that land. In other words, you had enough contact with the soil on your land that you knew exactly what it needed, and you gave it to it from stuff that was available there. Because that's the reality of it. If you're not looking at feeding, you know, or producing millions or thousands of metric tons of something, it's a lot easier to manage the quality of, and production of it. So number one thing that went wrong, we had all these cool machines and we thought we need to use them, right? So we quote Joe Bonamassa, great blues artist, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that's the reality. So we got these cool machines. We said, let's use them to the best and let's make everywhere farmland. Let's go to row farming or single crop farming, which in agriculture is the worst thing for the land. Okay. First thing you can do, the land. You're supposed to have seasonal crops growing at different times, filling in different nutrients, replacing different nutrients. You can't do that when you're a monocropping situation because you need to produce 13 metric tons of grain or you know, 4 metric tons of corn or whatever that mega growth that you've set yourself up for, right? So you got to buy big, you got to do big, you got to think big instead of saying, well, you know, it used to be, just make this as cool as possible, as healthy as possible. It turns out to be a much more humane way to farm as well. Because again, when you're talking about livestock, those are heartbeats, right? You know, and one of the biggest issues, and it really is all about this farming thing. And I know I still owe you 2 more reasons what's wrong with farming, but here's the thing, right? When we stack livestock in a truck and ship it, 2-3 on top of each other, and we ship it across state lines, across international boundaries, right? Whatever that is. But we ship that, and that's terrible for the animals because we traumatize them, right? We traumatize them right before we eat them. So here's the thing. First one was mechanization. We got too big too fast because we could. The second thing is this globalization. We said because we could feed everywhere, we should, and that it sets these mega farms up for this monocropping. And as I said, that's the worst thing that we could do to our land because it depletes soil too much. It requires massive induction of chemicals and nutrients to the soil that come from places that we really don't want to deal with, number one. And we definitely don't want to deal with their environmental conditions that producing these create. Because naturally, if you use the byproducts of harvested animals and you use leaves and all those other things in compost, you can easily get back to the idea of healthy soil without requiring other implements, without requiring chemicals to be brought in. The problem is when you, and this is really the idea of globalization and saying we can do this and drive down quality. The third one, as I said, the last two come quickly, was centralization. So the idea to say, because we need a butcher shop to run at such high volume to produce so much meat, we're going to ship all of our livestock to one area, cross state lines, cross international lines, to these mega butchers, right? And we have plenty of them in the States. And that's why you hear of, there's only like 3 or 4 major meat production companies in the country.
Right? Oh, yeah.
300-400 million people? What the hell? Right? So we're now load these cattle, load our poultry, stack them multiple animals on top of each other. Put them into traumatizing those animals, basically, right? So however questionable their growth cycle on the farm was, some farms are much better than others, but however good or bad the animal's life cycle was, we stack them in these trucks and then we ship them to somewhere. Well, if they're riding and defecating on each other for hours and hours or days and days, actually traumatizing the meat, releasing enzymes into the protein right before we harvest them to eat, right? Mm. We're consuming that fear. We're consuming that anger, that trauma that those animals all introduce into their protein right before their harvest. Because indeed, the last couple of days of their, you know, questionable life turned to shit, right?
Wow.
As they're riding in this truck. And then we go and we start eating that stuff, buying it from wherever we buy it because it's convenient. So the 3 things, just to summarize, the industrialization, we got so big, we thought we could use all these things, we thought we should. The second one is saying, hey, we can feed everybody. But what we end up doing is going into this monocropping thing. And that distorts the farm market in so many ways, even from an idea of providing government subsidies to farms. It skews it to these mega farms instead of mom and pop farms, which is what, going back to the idea of community. Farming, that is really what community is. And then I say the third thing is this idea of centralization, when we really do disgusting things to the animals right before we process them for food. Totally messed up. You know, you put those things together and it comes up with this thing, this current new buzzword, right, that people use for it is called a regenerative farming. That's the cool term for it, right? It used to be called permaculture.
But okay,
saying this dirt, this land, these animals deserve our respect. And we can give it to them and we can be part of that cycle, right? We just shouldn't abuse it, right? Just like the earth. We shouldn't abuse the earth either.
Oh.
You know, because we could, just because I can make a machine that's bigger than anything I've ever seen, doesn't mean I should go push around mountains, you know, because that changes a lot of stuff that, you know, we're not really going back to the idea of fitting into our environment. So now I know I went on long about what's wrong with agriculture, but let me tell you now how to fix it if I could, right?
Oh, please do.
So it's part of this cannabis is agriculture. And here's just a couple of quick facts. Before Prohibition, every farm in Georgia was required to grow hemp.
Oh, wow.
Required to grow hemp.
Wow. And what
that meant in this state specifically is that all of the livestock was fed hemp in their diet, some of them exclusively. So in other words, before we even knew what CBD was and the benefits of receiving CBD, and that is, you know, empirical evidence now, it's not just made up, you know, stories. There is evidence to say CBD does have beneficial issues in your health, you know.
Oh, sure.
And so you take that to the idea, excuse me, our livestock lived healthier and happier because they were eating CBD every day. So they were consuming CBD before we knew, even knew what it was. Because
oh, wow.
It was everywhere. Literally, it was produced for animals. So how do we fix it? We're going to bring that back. And as I started very back in the beginning with you, as I said, industrial hemp is even more important than adult use cannabis in the state, because industrial hemp can fix the soil. It actually puts enzymes and chemicals back into the soil to regenerate the soil, rejuvenate it. It helps it with air. Right? It helps clean our air more than just regular hardwoods and things does. And it also helps with our health benefit. So you put all those things in together and embrace industrial hemp for all its uses, paper, you know, even plastics, you know, biodegradable plastics. Those are all realistic.
Oh yeah.
With hemp. And this is the big if. If you have enough biomass to make that a reality. And that's the kind of one of the problems that goes on right now. And what's wrong with the current and really what's going on with my two competitors as well. They have issues with industrial hemp for different reasons. But one of them is because one of them's a big paper guy. So he's growing hardwood trees for paper and fiber. And, you know, the truth is hemp produces more fiber than hardwoods do on a multiplier of many times. People say, well, you know, 1 acre of hemp produces 4 times as much fiber as 1 acre of hardwood.
Oh, wow.
400 times the fiber, right? Well, that's the math is really wrong because you could really do 2 hemp crops a year. So it really is, you know, 8 times per acre of hardwoods, right? Because you grow 2 crops, right? But the truth is you only grow 1 acre of hardwood, takes you more like 20 years to grow. So it takes you 20 years to mature an acre of hardwood. It takes you half a year to mature an acre of hemp fiber, and you get 4 times as much fiber from it. So going back to that, when we started and said 5 companies kind of shut this down, and one of them was Hearst Paper or Hearst Publishing in California.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of acres of hardwood that they had bought for their publishing company. So those 5 companies, which would now be called oligarchs, because we now got that word.
Oh, yeah.
Changed the way our life was going, our health, and our economy.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of weird when you think about it.
Oh, definitely.
So that's why I'm here. I got upset, then I got smart. I listened, I learned, then I spent the next 5 months meeting with farmers and asked what they needed and you know, one of the coolest farmers, eighth generation farmer. He's got three generations on the farm right now. He has switched his entire farm to regenerative farm. After eight generations,
right,
he switched the farm. And he's making money. He's doing well. His, everyone in the town respects this guy. You know, I mean, he's a cool cat to speak with and meet. And, you know, I spent like 5-6 hours with him just chatting one day. And, you know, he was one that actually told me kind of interesting. He said, stop wasting your time with farmers. But what the hell is he talking about, right? I'm running for agriculture commissioner. Why would he tell me that? He says, you know what? Depending on how you count farmers, there's 40 or 50,000 of us here in the state. You need over 1 million votes to win, son. He goes, you better find an issue that broader than farming, even though we all eat food, right? We don't really participate in that market. As a matter of fact, I'll just say, most people don't even have a clue what the agriculture commissioner does in the state, right? That's the reality of it. No one knows what the hell this job is. And that's why most times it's just a give me position to whoever the governor is. And that's a reality of what's messed up about politics. This is a position and it pays well, you know, it's 150 or something thousand bucks, but, and it's agriculture is the largest developer, economic developer in the state, right? So still bigger than cars and all the other stuff is. So it's a very important job. But usually what it ends up being is just turns out to be a yes position to whoever the governor is because of the current two-party system. And that kind of goes into another story, maybe another podcast of why libertarians are and why there are other third parties, right? Because there's something wrong with the two-party system. And it won't take you long to go into, and I haven't been
watching,
but it won't take you long to go into what's wrong with the two-party system, even on to the, just these issues that I mentioned from the cannabis part. You know, in the state, there's a law in the state books that says cannabis is not agriculture.
Oh, wow.
So meaning cannabis, which is the overall plant, right? And then below it is hemp and below marijuana, but they're all part of the cannabis plant. There's actually a law in the books that says cannabis is not agriculture.
Oh, that's messed up.
Eliminates the possibility, or it does, and that was the clear intent. To restrict people from participating in this industry and going back to rights that were taken away from us in prohibition some 80 years ago, saying you should grow it, not only because it's healthy, it's good for livestock to eat, it's good for our bodies. You know, we have this thing called an endocannabinoid system, which receives these cannabinoids from this plant, right? So some reason that was put in us to receive these cannabinoids specifically. So by gosh, we should be spending time understanding how they complement and improve our lives, not standing behind a little veil of, you know, I'm in the Bible Belt or this or that. I can't talk about it because, you know, somebody might get high. Well, like I like to say, if we put that same restriction on corn, we'd have to make corn illegal because
people
moonshine out of corn all the time. So you're going to take that away. That means you're going to take away sugar. You're going to take away all these other products because someone might create an effect from it.
And exactly.
It's no longer fair for everyone else to say, you don't get it because I don't want it. Right. That's not. It's like saying, you know, you can't have a same sex lover because I don't approve it. You know, that's wrong. That's your life. You're doing what you want to do. If you're not hurting somebody else, you know, and you're not stealing from people or that, you know, you should be okay. And that's part of the libertarian part of it, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Don't mess with my stuff. You know, don't mess with, whether you're a government or another person, you know, don't steal my stuff and, you know, don't hurt me or my family. And I'm probably going to be okay with you, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. Of course.
Be fair, prosper. That's what we all should want for each other. That's why I tend not to talk so much about the libertarian issues, because one of the things when we start getting into the politics piece, it's really easy. There's left wingers and there's right wingers. And then there's libertarians that kind of float all around in there. Right. But it's so easy to get someone into an argument, you know, saying, well, would you vote for Trump or would you vote for abortions or those kind of things? Instead of saying, you know, let's focus on how, as agriculture commissioner, I can impact your life. I can't change those other things.
Exactly. And that's what I would tell others in your state too. Like, I'd say, hey, running for this, I mean, regardless of what you think on other issues, Because, yeah, like I know I've interviewed a lot of Green Party candidates as well. And when it, and there are, you know, differences between libertarians and Greens, but also a lot of similarities too. Sure. And there are certain jobs where, you know what, where it's mostly about the similarities. So I would say,
well, hey, even if you're
progressive, you know, the farm, you know, the agriculture commissioner is not going to be the person who makes cuts to public schools or cuts right. to unemployment insurance or nothing. Right. But when it comes to what you're talking about, you know, community-based economics, that's a Green Party value. Absolutely. Or even about just with cannabis and hemp. I mean, that's all over the political spectrum.
It should be all of our values, right? It is. Instead of trying to segregate me
exactly.
or them into a group and saying, hey, look, we probably have a ton of stuff in common, like, you know, wanting to be prosperous, wanting to be healthy, all those things. Let's build off on that like it should be. And then, you know, those other things seem pretty distant and easy to deal with once we got all this part, you know, our heads.
Exactly. Like focus on what we all have on common at first. Because another guest I interviewed who was running for, at the very end of the show, he was running for Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania this election. You know, the more we keep focusing on everything that we have differences on, the more we get screwed when it comes to the things we have in common.
Yeah. It, and the answer to that is go back to the street magic trick, right? It's, yeah. Touch this hand, will I manipulate everything over here? And that's exactly what's happening to us. If we're occupied by fighting over stuff, the minor differences between us, we're not going to really look at the major stuff that's going on around us. And I won't go into a long one here, but let me at least share this with the people.
All right.
Proof of this duplicity between the two-party system, just go back just a few weeks and look at, we passed something called the CHIPS Act. And if you look at it, it sounds really cool. You know, we're going to make integrated circuits here in the United States instead of another country. And for some reason, this industry needs a few $100 billion of our tax money to do that, right? Seems a lot in a pretense, but it gets passed mostly as a Republican Party issue. The next day, the Democrats issue, at that time it was called what, Inflation Reduction Act, right? It's changed three times, right? So the Republicans get this gimme bill for $300 million or so dollars. The next day, the Democrats get a $700 billion bill. So rough math, that's $1 trillion of our kids' money they gave away.
Wow.
Together in 1 week, right?
All right.
Oh, this also, at the same time, we're giving huge amounts to Ukraine and other places, right? But just think about the idea, the audacity of these parties to completely have collaborated to take $1 trillion away from us without even thinking about it. Because did you get to vote on?
Did
either one of those? Like, I mean, you know, yeah. The chip part, you know, get the fake it reduction in Inflation Act, right?
Yeah.
It totally party versus party, but both of them went through like that. So as it turns out, I think we're the chumps, right? I think, you know, we're being played in a certain way by that two-party system. You know, it's really a one-party system.
And it is with two factions.
Front guard, right? You know, who's put on your blue shirt today and go out and take some arrows, you know, put on your red shirt today.
Yeah.
You know, I need the story different, but thing happens. You and I and our families pay for it. And that's
big time.
What's really wrong with government, right? And again, we're going way off agriculture here, but, you know, again, I wanted this position because I wanted to get something done. And as I told my constituents out there, I'm going to promise to get this thing done in the best way for 10 million Georgians. I'm not going to promise you all sorts of stuff. I could. No. And believe it or not, I was on a debate with a Democrat candidate before the primaries. And he said he was going to raise teachers' pay. Told the whole crowd is going to raise teachers' pay. Going back to your point just a minute ago, Andrew, how the heck are you going to do that as the commissioner of agriculture? Why would you even say that you're
going
to do that? Because it's nowhere near your purview of duty.
And a lot of people, hey, you know, that sounds like a good idea. But like if he's running for governor and said that, hey, great. Right. Or an education position, hey, great, but
exactly. I'll fight for it, right?
But stay relevant to like what the actual job is as well. Well, speaking of debates, looking at the event part of your site there, I see a two debates coming up. Are you going to be on the debate stage for those?
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Nice. Nice. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
I would, so far, the two candidates that have made it through the primary have ducked the debates.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I'm going to be at every one of those. The first one is coming up. It's the League of Women Voters, and then followed by a PBS debate the following one. So, yeah, I'll be at both of them proud. Like I said, I tell all the people who see me, be loud and proud.
It's yeah.
Change how we act about this cannabis thing. Again, that's not my only one issue. And, you know, I've worked long enough on the three things that are wrong with agriculture. I get it, and I have a plan to fix it. But remember, we need more. I need voters all over the place.
Oh, definitely. So there's less than a minute for left. Georgia
is the idea.
Yeah.
That was why I came up with this website and campaign. I didn't want it to just be me. I wanted it to be a group of people making up the decision to say what is right for 10 million Georgia. So if you can ask your people to look at jointdecisionforgeorgia.com or email me at jointdecisionforgeorgia@gmail.com. My name's Dave Rodabaugh. I'm running for agriculture commissioner in Georgia. I'm on the ballot. So all I need is votes. If you can send a little money, that's great too. But please, if you're in Georgia or know people in Georgia, tell them here's a great candidate to help with issues that matter to Georgians. I'm the person.
Sounds good. Excellent. Again, the campaign site is jointdecisionforgeorgia.com. To find more Libertarian Party candidates running in this year's general election, visit lp.org. Very user-friendly site, as they make it simple for you to find out who is running for what offices and in which states. If interested in finding candidates from the Green Party in this year's election, you can find them at gp.org. Or you could listen to basically every other episode of the show this past year. I've interviewed quite a few Green Party candidates. But remember, it's not just federal office these parties run for. It's also local and statewide offices too, as you heard in this episode and a few previous ones. So even if you're seriously concerned about which major party wins the U.S. House and Senate in this year's midterms, at least keep an open mind and an eye out for other options running for other offices. After all, in many cases, it's the local issues that can bring people together even more. So take advantage of that opportunity if such options appear on your ballot. To hear more episodes of The Andrew Miller Show, future or previous, find The Andrew Miller Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms such as Radio Public, Pocket Casts, and Overcast. You can also follow The Andrew Miller Show on Facebook. Remember, let's move forward together, and for now, peace out.